Well, I tell you, spring has sprung in Salford. 18 degrees, it is outside 18 degrees. The sun has got his hat on. We're balmy here. It's hardly the Costa del Sol, but we're balmy. Hope all is well with you. Tuesday's programme, April 30th, 2024. The BBG with you live from Salford.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
A very serious report was published last week, and it has received very little coverage, but it's very important. The Internet Watch Foundation says children as young as three, are being manipulated into disturbing acts of sexual abuse. We're going to talk about this with Marilyn Hawes, a former teacher and a tireless campaigner for child safety. She runs Freedom from Abuse. Marilyn will be with me this hour. A little bit later on, we'll talk all things immigration, UK, but also, importantly, the Republic of Ireland. I've invited Herman Kelly back on the programme. It's been a while. Herman, of course, is the president of the Irish Freedom Party. He'll join me live, I think, from Dublin. I think. Might very well be in Brussels. But he'll be on the programme. We'll also look ahead to the local elections in Ireland in June and the EU elections there as well. Herman Kelly. Before that, though, Marilyn Hawes, the guest on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday. And you, of course, can reach out to me. Please do have an opinion. Do have one. Do share it with me. There's an app. Use the app or go to richieallen.co.uk where it says comment live. Couldn't be simpler. Yeah, I wouldn't normally do that, but I had to have a big drink of water there. I had to drink the water. It's warm enough. My missus is mad. Are you going to put on the air conditioning, says the missus? It's only 18 degrees out, love. Calm down, I said to her when she couldn't hear me. It's warm and it's lovely. And apparently, as I've already said yesterday, it's going to be a nice bank holiday weekend here in the UK for most people. The broadcast media are following a story out of London. You may have come across this today. A 14-year-old boy was killed, was murdered in an attack where a samurai sword was used, apparently, this morning in Hainault, East London. I hope I pronounced that correctly. It could be Hainault, East London. I lived in London twice, but I never heard of Hainault or Hainault. Five people were injured by this guy wielding a sword. He was tased and was eventually arrested. Pretty awful story that. The broadcast media, as I said, all over it. And there are a number of videos circulating online of this guy running riot with a samurai sword. I know this is going to sound really naive, but how do you come by something like that? I suppose you can buy them, can you? I suppose some people collect swords and there are places online where you can buy them and things like that. But pretty awful story. 14-year-old kid murdered. And the Donald Trump circus rolls on in New York. It's the second week of his trial. He's on trial for paying hush money to Stormy Daniels. And it's been interesting, I suppose, anybody who's interested in legal matters, because in the grand scheme of things, in terms of where our world is going and where we're going with it, unless we do something about it, I suppose in the grand scheme of things, it's not the most important story in the world. But I've always had an interest in trials and stuff. I was wondering why, I was musing to myself, why isn't the Trump trial being covered live? And then I caught myself on. Of course, he wouldn't allow it, as publicity hungry as he is. He wouldn't allow it. I suppose he'd have half his team telling him it would damage his chances of re-election, and the other half would probably tell him it would be a great boost to his chances of re-election. I've no idea. Gary Farrow, a banker, has been testifying, discussing the $130,000 paid to Stormy Daniels, the porn star. The trial's already heard from his assistant, Donald's assistant of 34 years, Rona Graff. She said she saw Daniels in Trump Tower's reception area. David Pecker, who used to great surname, especially in America, David Pecker, as a former publisher of the National Enquirer. He's also testified about how he bought and then buried damaging stories about the Donald. But the most interesting aspect of it today is that he has been found in contempt of court. And the judge who's presiding over these proceedings, yes, Justice Merchan, has found Trump willfully violated the court's gag order in 9 of the 10 contempt charges brought against him by prosecutors. He was fined $1,000 for each instance, for a total of $9,000 in total. I'm sure he can afford it. Anyway, we'll talk about some more important matters. Mentioned this in the papers podcast, which is a podcast you can pick up Monday to Friday, 7:30 a.m. It's a podcast that isn't live. And that is the NHS declaring that sex is biological fact. Now, when the papers are reporting that the NHS is declaring sex is biological fact, in reality, it is government ministers. Government ministers, they take a look at the NHS constitution. Yes, the NHS has a constitution. It's actually a document. And if you feel like it, you can read it online. And it aims to set out the principles, even values, of the health service. And also, it lays out legal rights for health. Richie, what is it? It must be this heat wave. That's what it must be. Right, so the constitution, right, let's start again, sets out the principles and values of the health service and the legal rights for patients and staff. It's updated every 10 years, it should be, by whoever is the Secretary of State, and it will be updated, and it will be updated to say that sex is biological fact. And this is good news for women's rights, real women. And they've welcomed this significant shift, which comes after, according to the Telegraph, years of wrangling and follows accusations the health service had been captured by gender ideology. So it won't be easy any longer. And it shouldn't be possible for a trans woman, which is nonsense, which is a man who believes he's a woman, he shouldn't be allowed in a single-sex ward where there are real women. That shouldn't happen anymore. So the new constitution will state, we are defining sex as biological sex, so the right to a single-sex ward for trans women should be gone. And real women shouldn't have to share sleeping accommodation. They shouldn't have to share wards with patients of the opposite biological sex. I found this funny today. The current health secretary is a woman called Victoria Atkins. She was speaking to LBC's Nick Ferrari. Jabba the Hutt, we call him in these parts. And, well, this is car crash, and I love a bit of car crash, me.
I have no plans currently, but if I were to choose to transition as a woman and I was admitted to a hospital and required single-sex wards, what ward would I go on?
Well, again, I appreciate this will be for very busy matrons and nurses and others to make the decision on the front line, but
I started laughing there when I heard this live this morning.
Where possible, we would want that person to be treated in the way that they would wish to be treated, whilst, of course, balancing the wishes of others. And so,
I've decided that I want to be a woman. Something happens to me. I get admitted to some hospital in London, even though I've had no surgery, and I'm going to be on a single-sex female ward.
Now, and this is crazy, Victoria Atkins is probably the worst Secretary of State ever. I don't mean health secretary. I mean secretary of any department. She's rubbish, this woman. Her own department has put out this amendment to the NHS Constitution to say biological sex is now sacrosanct, and she just can't find it within herself to say, Nick, we said it already. Biological sex will be all that matters. So no, the trans woman who hasn't had any surgery shouldn't expect to find himself on a female-only ward, but she ties herself up in knots.
No, so what that means is that the people running the ward have to take into account the views of everybody on that ward.
Straw poll.
Well, they have to go around and ask all the patients.
No, because if people are on, bearing in mind the ward is, you know, most wards are quite small nowadays.
Right.
Obviously, we do not know the, I mean, this is speculating, Nick, which is something I usually try and avoid in an interview, but I'm trying to help.
Just say it, love. From now on, Nick, blokes in dresses, in frocks, in cardigans, they with wigs, they will no longer be allowed on female-only wards, Nick. That's what we want, Nick. All right, shall we move on to talk about immigrants? But she doesn't.
I want to try and demonstrate the thought that's gone into this.
Right. It gets even worse.
Okay.
Of course, we will. The nurse or the matron or the clinician will balance the needs of everyone on that ward. There will be other factors at play. So, for example, somebody who is nearing the end of their life may need particular, may have particular clinical needs. They may need a particularly calm environment. All of these factors have to be taken into account.
So, if the tranny, the bloke who identifies as a woman, is coming near the end of his life and he needs a particularly calm environment, it may be the case that he may be allowed access to a female-only ward.
What we're saying is that biological sex should be one of those factors.
Oh, and only one, so not...
No, that's not what you said, you daft cow. You said, and I repeat, that biological sex, right, is fact. Sex is a biological fact. That's what you've said. And that trans women will be banned from female-only wards because they're not really women. That's what you said, you mad woman. It's your own bloody... It's your own policy.
Determining factor, then.
Well, it of course, in a busy ward, there will be many factors.
You would what the fuck difference does it make how busy the ward is?
Of course, clinical
Victoria
need
Atkins,
will
right.
be...
I decide I want to be a woman. I've not yet had any surgery. I fall off a ladder later today. Who is going to decide what ward I go on? Matron decides whether I'm going on a female ward.
Ooh, matron.
If I arrive in a skirt.
Yes, yes, and of course there will also be that some hospitals. Yeah, there will be single rooms as well. So there will be ways. This already happens, Nick. You know, it happens up and down the country every day. But what we want to do is make.
How does it happen up and down the country every day? Trans people are a fairly small, tiny minority. So how is it happening every day, up and down the hospital wards of the UK? It's happening all the time, Nick. Matrons are having to stop whatever they are doing to go and take a straw poll of all the women to ask them if anybody has any problems with the old tranny over there who wants to be on this ward. What bollocks?
It's clear in the Constitution that if somebody says, I would like to be on a single-sex ward, my biological sex ward, that is respected wherever possible, because we want to ensure that some of the reports we've seen of people, of those concerns somehow being dismissed or not being taken into account, we just want to make that clear in the Constitution.
This is the class of idiot that's running the country. Think back to yesterday's monologue, please. Not because that sounds very up my own arse, doesn't it? Think back to yesterday's monologue. I can't remember myself. No, not anything I said, of course. No, but Caroline Lucas giving an interview to Times Radio when she talked about just how idiotic, stupid and moronic most MPs really are in terms of not even knowing most of the time what it is they're voting for when they're sent into the division lobbies. This isn't a joke. She wasn't joking, Lucas. Listen to that cretin, Victoria Atkins, having put it out there that sex is biological fact and real women no longer have to expect to be confronted by a bloke in a dress in a women's ward in St. Ignatius of Malachy's Hospital in London. You know that one, don't you? It's just Charing Cross. And then she goes out this morning and talks all of that bollocks. Listen, on the same subject briefly, very briefly, Keir Starmer is the Labour leader. He expects to be the next Prime Minister. He was on Good Morning Britain today and this came up and he was asked, was Starmer, if he would like to apologise to Rosie Duffield. Very good. Now, Rosie Duffield, like Starmer, is a Labour MP and she was treated abysmally by the Labour Party for taking a pro woman stance against the gender and trans madness. She was heckled, she was bullied, she was abused, was Duffield. And the presenter of Good Morning Britain, Susanna Reid, wanted to ask Starmer if he had an apology for Rosie.
Is it right or is it wrong for Rosie Duffield to say only women have a cervix?
Well, look, biologically she of course is right,
she's right.
About
so
that.
So do you owe her an apology?
Well, I don't want this to go back into this toxic place.
Just say yes, dickhead. Just say yes and then end it. End that, you know, discussion and move on to something more important. Just say yes. Yes, actually, Susanna, we treated her pretty badly in the Labour Party. So, yes, I do apologise because she was right. Only women have a cervix, you know.
Place where
so
would everybody you, is
then
divided.
Would you say sorry to Rosie Duffield for look, the way that she's been treated?
Look, Rosie Duffield and I get on very well. We discuss a number of issues. She's a much respected member.
Didn't ask you that, numbnuts, whether you get on well with her or not and whether you agree on certain issues. Should you apologise to her for the way she was treated by some of your shadow ministers when she said women don't have a penis?
Member of the Parliamentary Labour
Party. Just say sorry.
Party. And I want to have a discussion with her and anybody else about how we go forward in a positive
way. Sorry, Rosie.
Positive way.
Okay. Can we...
Just one last question on this. There will be transgender patients, female patients, who will not want to go onto male wards, and I can completely understand their position as well.
What? You woke bibe. Look up bibe if you don't know what it means. That's the presenter being completely woke. Trannies, men, trans women, men, they don't want to be on wards with men, and I can understand. I can't understand it, to be honest with you. And that should be line in the sand kind of a thing. But anyway, what does Starmer say?
So what do we do in that situation?
Well, we have to accommodate that situation as it arises, but treat everybody with respect and with dignity.
Separate rooms then?
Well,
just say, you miserable, vacuous, empty-headed coward, just say, listen, biological males shouldn't be on female wards, all right? And then do your mealy-mouthed bullshit about how much you love the trannies. You can do that. You can do both. You can say, look, biological males, keep them away from women in hospitals. But I love the trans women. And they're the most vulnerable people in society. And they really have it terribly bad, you know. And we should do everything to make them feel as comfortable as we can in hospital, but in male wards, is what he should say.
Look, I do not accept that this is an issue that cannot be resolved with respect and dignity. Look, respect and dignity are something I've carried with me since I was a boy.
Fuck off. Respect and dignity's got nothing to do with it. You're a bloke, so go to the bloke's ward, all right? Let's never forget the leader of the Liberal Democrats. And he still is, despite the post office scandal. Ed Davey. I wonder, does he still believe this?
So a woman can have a penis?
Well, quite clearly.
Quite clearly. That's what he said. Let's talk about something different. It's 17 minutes, nearly 17 and one half minutes past the hour. Marilyn Hawes will be on your Richie Allen show very soon. And later on, Herman Kelly will be on from Ireland or from Brussels. I don't know. It's very exciting, isn't it? Not knowing things like this, like that. Okay, we'll talk now about... What have I got for you? Oh, yeah, the university protests in the United States of America. Did you know, you probably did know, that dozens of pro-Palestine demonstrators at Columbia University in New York City, which is a prestigious uni, they've escalated their protest by occupying an academic building, barricading themselves inside. And they did this early this morning. One student said the campus was lawless because officials are struggling with the long-running demo for the rights of the Palestinian people not to be genocided, right? And there has been a wave of rallies elsewhere, Texas, California, blah, blah, blah. So Columbia began suspending students, the university, who defied yesterday's deadline of 2 o'clock to leave their two-week encampment, which is near the building that has now been occupied. But as the deadline passed, according to the BBC, dozens of students rallied at the site. So Columbia Students for Justice in Palestine, which is a main protest group there, one of the main ones, vowed to defy the order and they've called on activists to come and protect the encampment. So they're standing up there for the rights of people in Gaza. I think it's laudable, and it's not because I happen to agree with them. I've said this 1,000 times before, whether I agree with people or not, they have the right to protest whatever they want. Same for Jewish people. There are some Jewish people who are very much on the side of Israel. I would say a minority, because the Jews I know are certainly no friends of Israel or fans of Israel. But those Jews have every right to go out on the streets and demonstrate too, and they should be able to do that without molestation from the authorities. So they're doing it in Colombia. It's ramping up that. Would you believe, coincidentally, Joseph Stiglitz, do you know who he is? Joseph Stiglitz, he's an economist and a professor of economics at Columbia. So he basically works at Columbia, but he's in London today. He's also a former Nobel Prize winner. He went on the BBC Politics programme this afternoon and he was asked about the protests and what did he think.
I support the idea that students should have empathy with what is a real disaster going around the world. I support that they the right to protest. That kind of protest had a big influence in my own life. I was down in the March in Washington with Martin Luther King in August of 1963. Those protests did change the course of our country.
Do you think these will change the course or President Biden's policy when it comes to all this?
They are actually making impact, a global impact. What worries me is, as a community, a college community is a special community where we're committed to learning.
Because some students are being prevented from going to class. Anecdotally, the president of Columbia said creating a harassing and intimidating environment for
some students feel that way. And you know, you can't deny that there is that sentiment. And that's why the complexity of the discussion is so difficult, because on the one hand, you want to create a positive environment for all of our students.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you want the right to protest.
Right,
and we have to balance the two.
Sure.
Well done, Joseph Stiglitz. Incidentally, he at one time advised Bill Clinton, didn't he? Yes, he did. He was on the chair of the Council of... He was the chair of the Council of Economic Advisers. He was succeeded by Janet Yellen. Yes, I did look that up. I could have you believe that I'm really brainy, and I knew that off the top of my head, but believe me, I didn't. He's a Jewish guy. He's in his early 80s now, as far as I understand it. This is the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday. I'm Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. We have got two interesting people to speak with today. Marilyn Hall, shortly, former teacher, a woman who had to deal with the horrors of learning that her own children were being abused by a teacher. She campaigns for child safety. She is a dynamo of a human being. That report that came out last week from Internet Watch Foundation, I can't get my head around it. A 22% increase in Category A imagery, which involves penetrative sexual activity, images involving sexual activity with children, with animals, sadism. It's horrendous, this. And I must give you a heads up. If you've got children around, I wouldn't listen to the next... from 4:30 onwards, I wouldn't listen for a half an hour or a bit longer. I'm not saying we'll be using very graphic terminology, but you never know. Horrendous stuff, this. Children as young as 3 being manipulated into disturbing acts of sexual abuse, according to the Internet Watch Foundation. We'll talk all things Irish politics, immigration, that row between the Irish government and the UK authorities about migrants leaving the UK, going to Ireland because they fear being swept up in the net, as the government says it's going to start putting people on planes to Rwanda. We'll get into that with the president of the Irish Freedom Party. His name is Herman Kelly, and we'll do that in the second hour. What else is there for you? Nothing really, only John Cleese made me laugh. He was on LBC Radio today, and on the programme they talked about Trigger Warnings, the latest sitcom to have a trigger warning plastered across it. It's Terry and June, which I'm old enough to remember. And that has a warning on it, doesn't it, about outdated attitudes and language. John Cleese was asked by the very same Nick Ferrari, what do you think?
Where are you on trigger warnings?
In favour of warnings.
Even on Terry and June has a content warning now.
Who?
Terry and June,
That's all right. Everybody's super sensitive at the moment, and I think it's just a mood that will pass in another couple of years. But the point is, warn people. just warn people, because if they've been warned, then they can not watch it. If they haven't been warned, they can start saying you shouldn't have transmitted
even in
that.
Is, hmm? Even in something such as Shakespeare? Isn't theatre's role in a part way to shock,
yes,
to a degree?
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Oh, my God, I can't believe
yes,
that.
Yes, it is. But if
just...
you're going to have people getting upset about things, just tell them you might, you know, get upset about things. Maybe there should be an announcement first thing in the morning. All the media saying some of the things you may hear today might
upset you.
Well, yeah. That's actually quite funny, isn't it? That idea. Put a warning out across the media. In Ireland, we had the Angelus on RTE1. At 6 o'clock, I don't know why I'm mentioning the Angelus, and we had the shutdown, didn't we, in the evening. But yeah, when TV and radio comes online in the morning, for some of the snowflakes out there, not a bad idea to put out a little warning saying that, you know, now you may encounter people that you might not get on with, you may encounter ideas and opinions today that you find mildly offensive or even greatly offensive, just be prepared. This is The Richie Allen Show. I'm Richie Allen. It's lovely to be with you as always. It really is. Marilyn Hawes, Freedom from Abuse, will be on the programme in about 3 minutes' time. Here's Todd Rundgren then. Todd Rundgren, 28 and one half minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. It's a Tuesday's programme, the final day of April. It seems like it's only Salford where we enjoy the sun. It's pretty cold everywhere else. It was exceptionally cold here for the last few weeks. I spent a week in Torquay where it was nicer. In any case, let's get Marilyn back on the programme. Your comments, please, to richieallen.co.uk, my website, or if you like, download the app. The app is, it's going swimmingly, the app. I'm proud of the app, so I am. I really am. You'll get it via Google Play. You'll get it via Apple's App Store. Do download it and leave a review if you don't mind. Now, when I was coming back last week, this story made some of the news, if that makes any sense. I know Sky picked it up, but very few broadcasters did. And it's important. I think it's more than important. It's huge. Three-year-olds are being manipulated into sexual abuse online. How could that be possible? Well, it is possible. The Internet Watch Foundation has put out a very serious report on this. It's credible. It's reliable. Manipulated into disturbing acts of sexual abuse, says the Internet Watch Foundation. And last year was the most extreme year on record for the IWF's abuse hotline. It saw a 22% increase in Category A imagery. So an increase of more than a fifth. And Category A imagery is imagery depicting penetrative sexual activity, sometimes with children, animals and sadism. It's horrendous. If you have a child, I wouldn't listen to the next 30, 35 minutes. I would catch it later on repeat. Now, to discuss this and more, we'll welcome back a friend to the programme. She's a former teacher who had to confront and deal with the abuse of her own children by their teacher. She is a tireless campaigner for child safety and runs the organisation Freedom from Abuse. The website is freedom-abuse.org, and the only support she receives is from people like you and people like me, so help her out where you can. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Marilyn Hawes. Marilyn, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. I'm fine, thanks Richie, and thank you so much for having me on again, because yours is a very open, free speech as it should be, and you know, the best donations we get are from your audience, so if you've done it before, please do it again.
Yeah, and I vouch for you. I don't vouch for very much. In fact, I purposely don't do that because I've been stung once or twice. But I've known Marilyn for years. I've gone over Freedom from Abuse with a microscope. It is an absolutely legitimate organisation. It's doing stellar work. She's doing stellar work going up and down the country, giving children and their parents, more importantly, the tools to avoid this. Look, the reason the media doesn't cover this, I think it's because it's horrific. It is horrific to hear that kids as young as three are making graphic photographs and videos of sexual abuse. How is it even possible, Marilyn? Children aged three are only learning how to speak. How can they be doing that?
It's heartbreaking. I never become immune to this because there's always a new problem. And this is because, and I don't want to blame parents, but I'm going to have to. What are they doing with a phone in the first place? Why is it in their bedroom? Category A is, as you say, it is rape. It is bondage. It is bestiality. It is just gross. And people like you and me who work for the Internet Watch Foundation have to look at this stuff and assess it into the Copine scale, which is category A, category B, category C. Category B is masturbation and oral sex. And category C, and this is where I always go through school websites, it is procurers who are looking for full face photos, arms and legs and torsos that they can then throw together in a child abuse image like a girly magazine. But if the parents buy the device and the phone, what are you doing giving it to a three-year-old or a five-year-old? 35% of 3 and 4 year olds now access and have a smartphone. I mean, and then they're using this in their bedrooms. This stuff that we're talking about has to happen through live streaming over a webcam. And so cover your webcams and get the devices out the bedrooms and talk to your children. I know it's horrible, Richie. I know. And I get so fed up. I was going to do something with, I'm not going to say who it was, another TV show 2 or 3 weeks ago. I got up at 5:30 in the morning to do the early, you know, head of the hour thing. Yeah. And oh no, that big container ship had knocked the Baltimore Bridge down. That's tragic. It's awful, but we don't live there.
No,
this
was
about
the
abuse going on in this country. And the trouble is, as well, we've got now is, don't get me wrong, AI is wonderful. AI is going to do so much, especially in the realms of health and stuff like that. But with every good thing we have some nerdy creep who wants to cause harm. And that's what's going on here.
Do you know what? So, I would take issue. We'll have another discussion someday when we don't talk about child abuse. I think AI could be used for great good, but I'm not sure it will be. But I want you to take us through this step by step. And I know it sounds like I'm treating you like a child. I'm not, but you've got to remember where you are. We've plenty of time, and I'm not going to cut you off after 3 minutes and then kick you into touch. Right. So let's talk about this. And at the risk of educating groomers, which we don't want to do, we still have to discuss this. So the child is given a smartphone, and it has a little camera on the face. The selfie camera, and on the back then it has the ordinary camera. So how do the predators, how do they make contact with the 3, 4, 5 year old? How do they do it? Which websites are they using? Is it TikTok? Is it Instagram?
Live streaming. They can use Snapchat, TikTok, all of those apps, but they can get to them through live streaming. And the thing is, why they like to use live streaming is it can't be traced in the same way that, what's the other thing we used to have that couldn't be traced? I can't remember it now, but live streaming can't be traced. And unfortunately, the things that they film are permanent. Now, they will say to the child, they have a voice distorter that makes them sound very young. Their webcam may or may not be working. They have heavy disguise that makes them look like a young child. And they show these kids pornography. This is not adult porn, what these children are doing. This is child abuse.
Hang on, Marilyn.
They will show adult pornography, which is horrendous. Then they coerce the child to do it to themselves, masturbate or whatever, play with themselves in front of the webcam or penetrate another child in front of the webcam. And the poor little kid doesn't know what it's doing. It's not the child's fault.
So this will be a child that has siblings then. So what you're telling me is that the paedophile will send a link, a hyperlink maybe, where the child will click on it. Like, for example, you and I might do TV, and I might send you a Zoom link. And once you click on the Zoom link, you're basically inside my computer, and I can stream you and me having a chat about whatever. And that's what they're doing. So they're bringing children to a kind of a Zoom situation.
So say they're using somebody else's phone, say it's somebody else's phone or whatever, but they can hack into the number. They can hack in and go, hello. And, you know, and the number of kids, I'm not joking. When I go into schools and I'm now being asked to go in to talk to 5-year-olds and 4-year-olds, which is a first in the 20 years I've done this. But you say to the 5-year-olds, you know, what games are you on and this, and they love the games. Some of them are on their own private YouTube channels where you have to be 18 for that. I mean, the online safety bill, okay, fine, it's there. I still don't think it's strong enough. But the responsibility, I'm sorry, lies with the parent. You bought the device. You've signed the contract. You are legally responsible. The anguish that happens once a child knows its private body parts are out there forever is horrendous. The impact is horrendous.
It's almost, I was listening to a guy called Hoyt, H-A-I-D-T. His first name escapes me now, but if I grab my notebook here, because I ran a bit of audio from him yesterday. He was on Politics Live with Joe Coburn, this guy. Let me see if I have it here. His name is Jonathan Hoyt, and he's written a book called The Anxious Generation, and it's about the damage that smartphones are doing to children. Obviously, sexual abuse is obviously a big deal, but he says it's damaging children in so many other ways. And he also blames the parents, and he's kind of torn between whether we make this a parental responsibility or whether there should be state intervention. I'm guessing you think it's so serious, Marilyn, that the state should intervene here.
I think it has to be everyone. The tech companies could do so much more, and they don't want to because there's money here. If they can put something up out there, they can similarly take it down, can't they? And the Internet Watch Foundation, I was at their conference last week, and it summed up with the online safety bill needs to do more, parents need to step up, and the technology companies need to do more. Ofcom needs to do more. You know, we should be seeing, because Ofcom has been involved in the online safety bill, they should be transparent about what they're finding, like the Internet Watch Foundation is, like the National Crime Agency is. But, you know, the figures, I'm just going to give you some stats, and I'm very rarely shocked, but this was 2023, right? The Internet Watch Foundation found they had 392,665 reports of what they thought were dodgy images, right? Of which 275,652 were of child sexual abuse. Now, if the Internet Watch Foundation can remove an image within 1 minute, why can't the tech companies? Every 114 seconds, they find a child sex abuse image. Now, online, and you won't be able to teach an offender through this chat because they're already at it. Their minds are so distorted that you don't need, there's nothing you teach them. They already know it, you know. But there's 228 websites out there that are guiding creeps to generate images that are sent to them, and then using a nudifying tool to strip that child naked of what it actually sees in front of it, and also not only but also creating fake images of them.
So these are real children whose images have been taken by groomers, and then they take those images and they use ever more sophisticated computer programs, artificial intelligence, to portray those children doing unspeakable things.
Absolutely right. And on the dark web now, they have for a long time on the dark web been selling a book every month on the easiest, most stupid passwords that you can get into very quickly. This is a multi-billion dollar business, you know, and they can now buy a handbook on how to do sextortion, which has got 60,000 words across 20 pages. It's completely illegal in the UK. But what is so sad is teenage boys, now it's every age and every gender, don't get me wrong, but principally boys, the increase on sextortion, which is being coerced to do nude selfies and pictures, what the boys call it dick pics, right? And the boys tend to do it. And of course, that ends up in the wrong hands. That has increased 8 times in 2023 above the figures that were in 2022. 8 times more.
There's
you can't
nothing,
blame this on lockdown. This has nothing to do with lockdown.
There's nothing good about smartphones. Right, so I'm gonna push you on this because you said Ofcom needs to do more. You said the tech companies do more. Well, I want you to be specific, Marilyn. So you get to be in charge for a month. What more should they do then? What exactly, specifically, should companies do?
They can change the algorithms. I mean, that's the start. They can change the algorithms. So if people listening don't know how that works, it's an automatic response to something that you're looking at. And I am deeply heartbroken by the number of young kids, young teenagers that take their life because they've been in cyberbullying, yeah? Now, or self-harming. You know, there's a game called Roblox, which the little kids, 9-year-olds, love. I never tell them this, but I'm telling your listening audience, if your child is on Roblox, within Roblox, there is a game called The Game. And The Game introduces 9- and 10-year-olds to suicidal thoughts and self-harming. How helpful is that?
But who would want to do that? What sort of maniac would manipulate a game?
They should be locked up, shot, locked up, whatever. I don't care, but get them off the planet. And then you've got the thing is with the say I'm 13 and my children, my best friend's got anorexia and I don't know what anorexia is. So I key in anorexia and it comes up and tells me all about it. And then I do it again. Oh, that's self-harming. Let me look again. And I look again. And then my mum calls me and says, you know, Caroline, it's time for tea. All right, I'll go back later. So I go downstairs. I shoot upstairs after my tea and I have a look again. You only need to do it 3 or 4 times. And that child will be inundated with stuff on self-harm and anorexia and suicidal thoughts for the next 6 weeks. And it's 6 weeks if that child never, ever clicks again on that interest. Now, they could immediately stop those algorithms. They wrote the algorithms in the first place. They can change them.
So they could change
but
them.
But there's so much money in here, you see. This is the trouble. There's an app, that game, that these, I cannot believe it. Every primary school I go into, anyone go on Discord, up go the hands. Discord is run by the Pornhub. OnlyFans is another one all the girls like. It's a pimping site. I mean, it is absolutely. And as for Facebook, see, some of these are direct approaches to the children, but the number of parents that use Facebook is incredible. There is no safety or security on it, and it is a Christmas present to any paedophile that wants to go in and help themselves to any images they find of children.
So on the one hand, let's stay with this. This is important, right? Right. So, I mean, I remember people talking about this years ago. Years and years and years ago, when Facebook became a thing, there were people, and I imagine you were one of them, there were people warning, why are you giving over so much of your data? So many images and, you know, and videos that are going to be out there forever. You know, maybe it's not a good thing to put so much information out there about your children. And yet that's what people do. They do it on Instagram. They do it on Facebook. And you're saying it's so easy then for the paedophile to go in there, take the images and make films, make videos, make images and put them out there.
And parents will put out on Facebook, they'll put out little videos, do you know what I mean, of their children. And so will grandparents. It does my head in when you see, you know, some grandparents put out on Facebook to say their grandchildren in the bath. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? Go on something that's encrypted, WhatsApp, Wire or Signal. They are encrypted. Now we have another problem with that, you see, because Facebook is now saying, well, we'll encrypt it. Now, the problem why the online safety bill took so long was this problem with encryption. A lot of people were saying, well, what are the kids? Fair enough. What are the kids doing on the internet anyway? They're too young. It was created for adults, true. And encryption was so you could have free speech. And so it's locked and blocked either end. That's what encryption is. But the trouble is with encryption,
If your child has a WhatsApp account, it's, you know, okay, so it might be linked to the parent, but there's so many children that I get, 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds, that have gone against the age specification, yeah, because they shouldn't be on it till they're 13 or 14, but they're 8, 9 years old, and they go on it, and they set up their own account, and they lie, and they set up a profile for 15, age 16, whatever, and they go on WhatsApp. Now, if a paedophile contacts them, the police can't help, because they can't find out who it is. They can't unlock the encryption. So in one way, encryption keeps adults safer with any things they want to share between adults. But it's not going to keep children safer, because the police will not be able
to don't have a back door in.
So who it was that contacted them.
What about those who, and this comes up every time we speak, what about those who say the online safety bill isn't really about protecting children, that historically governments and politicians don't really care about children, that what it really is it's an excuse to use children as the, you know, kind of primary motivation for online safety, but in reality they're trying to shut down dissent or to monitor people in a way that they never did before.
Exactly right. Every government that I've been doing this for 23 years, right? Every government, doesn't matter what colour you are, blue, red, yellow, whatever, every government has failed children in this country, and it's consistent. It's just lip service. It's just hot air. And I'm sorry to say, but the big charities who are joined to the government hip, who have been around the planet for about 40, 50 years, why is it getting worse? Why haven't they sorted it? We know it's bad, so get on and sort it. But, you know, you can't slag off any. You can't slag off the government if you're getting funding from them. You have to sign that little caveat that says you sing from the same hymn sheet. Well, I don't sing from anyone's hymn sheet. My hymn sheet is looking after children. That is my primary concern. They only have the adults in their lives to protect them. They're little people. It's part of UNICEF's child's rights that they have a right to be prevented from harm. So if you're a parent or a grandparent giving a child a phone, I was in a school the other day, I said to these 9-year-olds, how many of you got a smartphone? I would say 98%, put the hand up. Faces jaw-dropping. And
nine.
I said, how many of you think it's a toy? 50% of that 98% thought they'd been given a toy. And they said, this isn't a toy. This is an adult device. Have your parents not sat down with you? And then I've said to them, how many of you cover your webcam? A lot of them didn't know what a webcam was, so we had to show them. And I said, now you know what it is. Do you ever see your mum and dad with like a little cover on that little camera lens? Yes, some have a slider. I said, do they do it to your device? No. So why is it any different for the adult to have their webcam covered, but not their
child. But not their children. Let me ask you this, Marilyn, because then I want to talk to you about physical teaching. I want to talk to you about the trans stuff as well in the time we have left. But but Marilyn Hawes is our guest. Freedom from Abuse is the website, freedom-abuse.org. Do support her. It's all there, the courses you can do online, the networks, the mission to keep children safe from this type of grooming. Marilyn says parents just should not give these devices to children, full stop. There should be no exceptions, no exemptions. Children under... He reckons, this guy, just before we talk about children in the classroom and some of the concepts they're being asked to discuss, this guy, Jonathan Haidt, who's written this book about how the phones have damaged children in so many different ways, he reckons they shouldn't have them until they're 16. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. And it's very interesting. There was a guy who wrote in The Telegraph the other day. He was a very innovative, radical head teacher. And it's a school in London, which was rated the worst school in London to send your child to. And he's turned it round. And what he's doing, he made a very valid point in this article, that we pushed kids during lockdown in isolation. We pushed them through education to go on smartphones, to go on devices. And, you know, to some extent, there is a responsibility there. But you know what he's doing now? He's trying to break that dependency and that habit where they go out of school and they're on their phones. If you let your child, so I know this for a fact, the Royal Society of Psychiatrics told me, but I know it anyway, and it's Ofcom as well. 65% of children who take their phone to bed at night access it 30 times. And the academic achievement totally drops.
They access it 30 times during the night.
30 times. If you let your child have their devices in their bedroom and their phones, 65% of them admit, so how many more is it, to accessing their devices 30 times at night. Now, you know, take them out. Well, why is it so difficult? Don't let them have the things in the bedroom. Take them out the bedroom, cover the webcams. You leave from the front at bedtime. Everybody puts their devices and phones somewhere where the kids can't get to them. And you will see their academic work improve. Now, this guy, what he's doing in this school, he is trying to break this habit to make sure the kids get out and actually have some fresh air and sport, because there's this whole lethargy and this complacency about, oh, I'd rather be at home, sat on the sofa. I did it for 2 years during lockdown, you know, having to kickstart and reboot them. And he is doing a 12-hour day starting at 7 a.m. till 8 p.m. where the children go in at 7, they have breakfast, they have their lessons, no phones. And then they have dinner in the evening, which, and he's in a very poor financially strapped area, yeah, right in the shadow of Grenfell, and really had problems during that. And some of the children were part and pupils at his school. Then they have dinner in the evening. Someone sits with them while they do their homework. And then they play football, they do sport, they do whatever types of games they want. And then they go home.
And
then
the idea is they're knackered. They're knackered when they get home, right? The idea is they get home and they're absolutely bloody knackered, so they're not interested.
Well, exactly right. But you know, when you know, it's, I know it's a pilot. I totally support it, because he said somehow we have got to break this cycle. Now, he's got 900 kids in the school. 120 have signed up. Now, they're probably the parents that are doing it okay anyway. But, you know, give it a chance. You know, let's see if it works. Watch this space.
Yeah.
And the I, if I do a parents course, the school pay me. I go in every day. So I believe in triangulated education. That means the staff, the parents, the kids, as it used to be 20 years ago. You'd call the parent in and you think, got a little bit of a problem, blah, blah, blah. So these, they pay me, but it's free for the parents. They don't even have to come to the school hall. They can stay in their onesie with a beer and do it online, right? You would not believe the poor uptake.
I know you told
it's
me
like
last time.
Everybody else's I was horrified.
Yeah, I was horrified, yeah. Listen, I'm going to read 3 or 4 comments, and then in the 5 minutes we have left, I want to ask you about, because as much as the grooming is so important to talk about and how to protect children against it, I think what's happening in terms of what children are being asked to discuss and what they're being told to consider in schools, I think it's deadly. But let me read a few of these comments. Grace Ann says, I still find it hard to understand a 3-year-old understands enough to work a website, a link, or what is being requested of them. I can understand if it's kids aged over 5, Richie, but 3, it seems extreme to me, says Grace Ann. She's horrified by this, as are many of our listeners. Michelle says, Richie, there needs to be more transparency by the tech companies as to what these algorithms are doing and how they influence not just young minds, but all of our minds. Baird says, Richie, the police can access encrypted data if they want to. For example, if they've been racist, if somebody has been racist or transphobic online. Marilyn is right. There will be no help to stop this. It's up to the parents. And this from Cookie. Marilyn is a great, great way to explain this topic. Not having children myself, I didn't realise what has been happening to children, how vulnerable they are to these devices. Yeah.
Can I just say this? Do we really want another smack between the eyes? For the first time in 2023, 92%, which is 9 out of 10 reports, were self-generated images of child sexual abuse, category A. 2,401 of them by the Internet Watch Foundation were aged 3 to 6. That's the first time that's happened. What's it going to be like at the end of 2024? So let's talk about transgender, because that's another pet hate of mine. Let me explain it. Are you there?
No, I'm absolutely gripped by this. I mean, you've been a teacher for years. What would you have said if somebody had came to you when you were teaching to say, right, Marilyn, you've got year four, so you've got 8-year-olds or 7-year-olds. We want you to sit them down and talk to them about masturbation. We want you to sit down and talk to them about the gender-bred man and all of this stuff. How would you have reacted?
I wouldn't do it. I would have lost my job, because I fundamentally believe what they're doing is child abuse. Stonewall is the problem.
It's
Stonewall
grooming, yeah.
Should be absolutely dreadful. So my little granddaughter starts school in September, right? And I am going to contact the school. I went to see it with my son and wife and all of that, his wife. And I am going to ask them, because I get contacted by so many parents with 5-year-olds. The child starts school and they say, oh, if you feel like you're a little boy today, Susan, there's a special toilet you can go to. We won't tell mummy. And if you think your name is John, that's fine. No, it's not fine. A, it's lying. B, it's setting parents against you. If I was a parent now, I would demand to know what their sex education is. I would demand. And what gets me is the NHS. Oh, you got me on one now. The NHS and Church of England schools down in Kent, yes, are like allowing their teachers to talk about all this, the transgender stuff, and breastbinding comes under the Female Genital Mutilation Act, and yet the NHS and secondary schools are telling girls to breastbind. It is child abuse, and to distort a child's thinking when they're 5-6 years old is outrageous.
Isn't there a bit of pushback against it now, isn't there? You know,
I agree with you, Richie. I think the tide is just beginning to turn. And I think with the NHS today saying you should be able to have single sex wards. Correct. I truly do believe there are people. Truly, I believe there are people that are born into the wrong body. Chromosome disorders and mismatch of chromosomes. I utterly get that. I do not, however, believe there's 2 or 3 of them in every single class in every single school across the UK. That's bonkers.
I don't personally believe that anybody can be born in the wrong body, but I see where you're coming from. Yes, chromosome disorders are real and gender dysphoria is real. I do get that, but I don't believe you can be born in the wrong body. And
but you know what I mean?
I get what you mean, yeah.
I'm meaning the chromosomes. But then so many of these people, the Tavistock Clinic, they're another one that should be in court and all locked up. The damage they've done to some of those kids who now want to reverse their gender and can't. And the number of youngsters that then go on and sadly take their own life because they don't know who they are or what they are.
What they are. Somebody said to me, when the last time I discussed this, I haven't discussed this recently, but the last time I discussed it, a listener got in touch to say that she had, like yourself, had previously been a teacher. And she said, I could see how children could act up because children are very clever. They're very cute. And if you introduce these concepts to children, you could conceivably see some children lying about it just because they want to act up or because they think it might give them some advantage or they might receive, you know, attention or whatever. Is that you'd agree with that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, of course there is. I think there's a hop on that bandwagon. But I don't know if you read this the other day, that there's I can't remember the woman's name, but she was a volunteer for the NSPCC for 30 years, right? Now, I don't like the NSPCC. I know about them because they don't do the job they're supposed to be doing. They're not National Society of the Prevention of Child Abuse. They don't prevent it. They just churn out all these figures. Peter Wanless, the CEO, has had to step down because the NSPCC have jumped on the Stonewall bandwagon, are sending their volunteers into schools to talk about, are you a boy? Are you a girl? They've bought in to that narrative. And this woman who was a police officer in her time, after 30 years, she was a whistleblower and she's come out and she did a brilliant article online about what's going on. And this is a thing, you see, the big charities follow the money and they will hop on board. It is fundamental. If the NSPCC are following that, it's a disgrace. If you, I'm so angry. This transgender thing, I mean, I've got 7 grandchildren and another one to be born, and I fear for what they're going to be told. One of them is about to start secondary school. I really worry. I do sometimes wonder, and I don't, this is a point as well, actually, that do girls, because there's so much harmful sexualized behavior in secondary schools because of the amount of boys that are watching pornography on their smartphones, yeah? And they're thinking it's normal, so they start touching these girls up and doing all this. I'm wondering if some girls think, well, you know what? If I became a boy, I won't be touched. I just wonder if there's some of that going on in the mix as well.
You never know. Listen, we're just about out of time. I want to give another plug for the website. You've been listening to Marilyn Hawes, Freedom from Abuse. Marilyn is a former teacher herself. She had to deal with sexual abuse, sadly for her and her family close to home. Her children were groomed and abused by their teacher. She's a tireless campaigner to educate parents and children how to avoid it, how to see the signs of it and to stop it, to nip it in the bud. And she's campaigning for parents to wise up and to not give smartphones to their children. The website is freedom-abuse.org. Do support her if you can. Very quick final word to you, Marilyn. Good to chat with you. It's a horrible subject, really. But it's good to have you on.
It has to be spoken about. I mean, cancer used to be, you know, like, ooh, the C word. We have to talk about the crap in life because it never gets sorted otherwise.
Yeah, if you're a parent, your child shouldn't have one of those devices.
You know, I urge parents, don't be frightened of it. Knowledge is power. You know, go to these school things. Get me in your child's school. Come online and learn. I did a free session on pornography on Eventbrite. I did one the other night for free. We got 33 people. We sent it everywhere on child, early child trauma. Yeah, we did another one on county lines. We got 40 people to that one and it went everywhere. What is wrong with people?
Let us know in advance when you're doing them, and I'll, as much as I can anyway, plug them on this programme. Do that. Just send me a WhatsApp and I'll give it a few mentions in the run-up to the event. So next time you have an event, just let me know. Marilyn, thanks for all you do. Not at all. Thanks for all you do.
And if you save one child from being harmed, your oxygen is worth it. They only have us, for goodness sake. You know, I'm a grandmother now. I should be retired, but I am passionate about this, really passionate. It is our job and responsibility to help these kids. It's not their fault when they get harmed. It's some blooming creep that's contacted them, and it's wrong. And as for transgender,
it sounds easily avoidable if they don't have the devices to begin with.
If they don't have the device, or if you've got the number of parents that don't even put the parental locks on the phones and devices, and they're free to download.
It's mind-boggling. They're free. Marilyn, thanks for your time today. Great to have you on.
Thank you. God bless
you. You're welcome. Until next time, Marilyn Hawes, former teacher, as I said, had to deal with it herself. The people who abused her children went to prison, by the way, you'll be glad to know. Former teacher, decades in education, now works to speak to parents about the horrors that are at the end of a smartphone, really. Lots of commentary on this, unsurprisingly, parents and otherwise. Elizabeth says, I can confirm kids are on their phones during the night, all the night. My daughter's friends would only sleep a couple of hours when they would sleep over. She used to beg for her phone, but it stayed in the living room until the morning. Sarah came on to say, parents are not parents these days, says Sarah. They are both working full-time most of the time, knackered, and can't be arsed to parent. Kids are just given devices to keep them quiet, says Sarah. Somebody said that to me before. The smartphone is the modern-day pacifier, or dummy, as we would call them, dummies. Back in the day. Hi to Mick, who says, Richie, I wonder what Islamic schools think of this grooming, because Christian schools or Christian type schools seem oblivious to the madness, says Mick. Thank you, Mick. Hi to Claire, to my pal Claire. If sex education in schools is innocent, why are parents not being told what they are teaching the kids in these classes, asks Claire. Yeah, didn't we? That's an interesting point. Didn't we hear a story last year whereby a school declined to show the material used in a sex education class, refused to show the material to the parent, saying that there was a copyright issue around it. Namely that the school was using material that had been given to the school by a third party, and that the school was bound to only distribute the material within the classroom because of a licensing issue. Unbelievable. I remember this. It was in the Times newspaper. And they said to a parent, we can't show you the materials, the images, the booklets, we can't show you because we are prohibited from doing so because we're licensed to use it only in the classroom. Madness. And I think when the parent tried to take it further, they were told, no, you can't. The school is well within its rights not to show you the material. Mad stuff. Patrick says, Richie, Japanese researchers, is there a gag here? Maybe there isn't. Japanese researchers managed to turn a male catfish 100% female using a compound called isoflavone. Is there a gag? It's found in soy products. So imagine what that is doing to your hormones. I don't think Patrick is joking. This is the first I've heard of it. So Japanese researchers turned a male catfish into a female using a compound found in soy products, isoflavone. Or isoflavone, I reckon. Yeah. Remember Alex all those years ago? Everybody laughed, including me. They're turning the frogs gay. Richie, says Christine. Good evening, Christine. I hope Jesse as well, Christine. Do let me know how he's getting on, by the way, if you don't mind. This transgender stuff is mad. Parents think, oh, that's not happening in my kid's school, without even checking. Enoch Burke is still in prison because he took a stand. I know many don't agree with how he went about it, but more teachers need to take a stand. Enoch Burke is a teacher in a school back home in Ireland, and he refused to use pronouns, didn't he, because it's ridiculous. And then he was suspended or he was fired and he attempted to go back to work, and a court found him in contempt, and he's in prison to this day. Says Christine. Patricia says, Richie, any interest in a child in any way sexual is sickening and it is disgusting. Marilyn's passion and commitment to stopping it is fantastic. A big thank you to her, says Patricia. Now, it's coming up for 9 minutes past the hour. You are listening to your Richie Allen Show. It is broadcasting, as usual, live from the great city of Salford here in the northwest of the UK. And coming up shortly, we're off to Ireland to speak to Herman Kelly, the president of Ireland's Freedom Party. You don't want to, or the Irish Freedom Party. Yeah, the Irish Freedom Party. I got it right second time round, didn't I? The heat is killing us here in Salford. It's 18 degrees and sunny. They haven't been spraying, you see. Here's Elbow. One Day Like This from Elbow. It is El Scorchio Tremendo here in Salford. Not so nice back home, I don't believe. But as I said, it's rumoured to be a beautiful, or it will be a beautiful bank holiday weekend ahead. It is a bank holiday weekend here in the UK this coming weekend. Might be also back home. I'll ask Herman in a moment. I can't remember, to be honest with you. Before we welcome Herman Kelly back to this programme, let me read you this from RTE Paul Cunningham, political correspondent for Ireland's national broadcaster. The cabinet, that is the Irish cabinet, has been told it is now estimated that so far this year up to 90% of asylum seekers here have travelled from Northern Ireland. RTE News understands this figure was provided by Minister for Justice Helen McEntee in her update to colleagues this morning. Previously, Ms. McEntee had said that 80% of asylum seekers coming into Ireland are coming from the UK via Northern Ireland across the border. Now, the Cabinet approved proposals to quickly draft legislation so that the UK can again be designated as a safe country to return people seeking asylum. Now, as I mentioned in the monologue at the beginning of the programme, the UK government is saying, no, we won't be taking anybody back. We decide, according to the UK government, who we allow return here and who we don't. And the UK has cited France's refusal to take migrants that have left France and come to the UK on small boats in the Channel. Now, to discuss this and other matters, let's welcome back to the programme the President of the Irish Freedom Party, Herman Kelly. Welcome back, Herman. How are you?
Richie, I'm in great form, and you're right about the weather. It's not so sunny here. It's not a scorcher here.
Is it not? Well, I'm sorry to hear it.
About half five this morning, putting banners over the motorway. And yeah, it was pretty drizzly and a bit wet. So no scorcher here in Ireland.
No scorcher. What about the week? Is it a bank holiday weekend, Herman, this weekend back home?
It is on Monday, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And well, there's a big rally, big nationalist rally in the Garden of Remembrance going down to Customs House on Monday at 2:30. So you're very welcome.
Anybody listening all your is welcome. Listeners. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know
why
what,
not?
Richie? I'll have to make a slight correction there. I think you may have, there may have been a mistake in what you read out there. You said the national broadcaster, RTE. I think it should have read the state broadcaster.
Fair enough. I'll give you that. You won't get any arguments from me. You won't get any arguments. I tried to be professional, Herman, and then I descend.
You've been very nice.
No, listen, yeah, and you can give another plug for the rally a bit later on. Before we talk about that situation with migrants coming in from across the border, coming from Northern Ireland, and I'm fascinated by this. It seems to me, listening to Irish radio and television coverage in recent days, that they're dropping, or at least in some cases, they're dropping the term far right when referring to nationalist parties and nationalist movements. Now, I could be getting this completely wrong, but it's just what I've noticed.
No, you're right, you're correct.
Do you think they've realised that it's lost its lustre, it's lost its ability to defame people?
It's lost its power to damage. The arrow, it reaches its target, but it doesn't cause any pain, because there was an Amharic or Irish Daily Mail poll there last week, which showed that 79% of people in Ireland have had enough immigration, what previously they would have called the opinions of the far right. So they tried to inflict damage by this appellation far right, but it hasn't now seemingly everybody's far right, so they can't use this hurty word anymore, this lying phrase that they were throwing at anybody and anybody with whom they disagreed. So yes, now it's called the populist right, or it's other things, it's right-wing parties now rather than far right. Well, we were never a party with kind of skinheads who'd walk around with bobber boots and stuff like that. There, it was nothing to do with the BNP or anything, or National Front or anything like that. They've realised in the last 6 months that the general population of the country have had enough of immigration. They were tired of the lies that we were all fed by the government during the lockdown, and they detest the idea that this draconian authoritarian state would think of imposing laws against freedom of speech. And yet, when you think about what happened during the lockdown, about the all-powerful state will dictate if you can go to work, travel, if you can see your family, and there was even talk at one stage of mandatory vaccination, that is the very definition of fascism, as Benito Mussolini would have put it in the 1930s, about the amalgamation of power between the big state and big corporations. That is fascism. And so they're the ones who you could call far right, but it's certainly not people like myself and the Irish Freedom Party, who's in favour of free speech and in favour of a smaller state, a lower wasteful spending, and more power to the individual and more power to the family rather than the big state.
One of the great ironies, what you've just described there, that the state behaved in a fascistic way and then went and declared anybody who opposed the fascism and the tyranny that they, you know, rolled out in 2020, well, anybody who opposed it was the fascist or was far right. It's such an irony that the abuser accusing the abused of being the abuser. It's a really interesting concept. Before we talk about immigration, I like to throw curveballs at my listeners. Do you remember when? We're very similar in age, you and I, but I don't remember when, because I've always been agnostic and I've always been a bit of a liberal, me. I always have been, right? But I've always had great respect for my friends and family who would be Christians or Christian conservative, who, like yourself, believe in government with a small c. you know, lower taxes, less interference by the government. Do you remember exactly when people who had, you know, a conservative outlook, Christian people, God-fearing, if you want to use that term, people who are proud of their country, who are proud of their country's traditions, who might have frowned on, you know, abortion and other things like that. Do you remember when that became a target for the media and for the government? Do you remember, was there a specific time?
Well,
was it in the 80s or the 90s? When?
Well, I believe it's a little bit earlier, actually. In the, it started, now it didn't have much power, but it began, I believe, in the mid-late 70s. There's a book by two journalists called Henley and Scott about 15 years ago called The Lost Revolution. And it's about the stickies, which were then amalgamated with the official IRA. And it basically showed how one part of Sinn Féin broke off to who rejected nationalism, took on Marxism, and how over time the Marxism within their ideology basically expelled nationalism. And that became Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party. Their nickname was the Stickies. And they had a growing influence culturally since the 70s because they were very smart. They were very small in number, but they got a lot of their members into the media. And then they were able to push their cultural agenda, which is anti-nationalist, anti-Christian, anti-family, even down now, like where they've moved from the economic Marxism to the cultural Marxism, and it's all about the destruction of the nation state, the family, and even the idea of sex and male and female and the distinction between those two things. So I think it really, the seed was sown in the mid-70s in Ireland, but it really reached its zenith of power. It really started to come out in the 80s and 90s.
Now, Herman,
the media turned against the idea of the nation state, the influence of Christianity on the people and the importance of family and faith and nationhood. Yes, but what you know what? We are making a bit of a conservative comeback or a nationalist comeback that to stress to people the importance of family and... And nation and
we can't ignore Herman. Sorry for interrupting you. We can't ignore the church scandals, though. Which emerged in the late 80s and 90s. So I hear you. Yeah. And funnily enough, I do remember Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party. I remember this. I remember this in Ballybeg in Waterford when I was younger. And I won't get into this with you. Maybe we will another day. We can have a good old chat about politics and political parties and movements. But for me, social democracy or social democrats are a completely different thing to socialism. I'd be an old Bolivarian socialist, me. That's what I'd be. I'd be a Salvador Allende man. You know, if I had to pick a side. And that, not to get into this, but we would never have anything against Christian conservatives or the families or nationalism. You know, we embrace nationalism. Salvador Allende, the socialist president of Chile, was a nationalist to his bone marrow, nationalised everything that belonged to the country, took it back for the people of the country. And I mean, we could be here all day talking about this. But yeah, what you said about the splintering off in Sinn Féin, the attack on these values that everybody respected, even if you didn't agree with them, because, I mean, trade unionists of yore in Ireland, they got on with Christians and Christian conservatives, even if they were agnostic themselves.
They were looking for better conditions.
Absolutely, right. But the church scandals did help this awful agenda, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. It undermined moral authority of the church up until then greatly. It actually did huge damage, not only to the children that were molested, but also to undermine the moral authority of the church was very shocking to individual people and to a country. But I will say one thing about the sense of national solidarity, and I suppose Christian charity is involved with this as well, is both those things are the underpinning of the idea of the welfare state. So when the left, now self-described, says that they want to get rid of any sense of nationhood or get rid of the influence of Christianity out of our culture, they are also deeply undermining the foundation of the welfare state, and because people, sense of national solidarity and charity is the foundation why you're happy to pay taxes to help people who've lost a job or who've got sick or who've got old and need help and they can't provide for themselves.
before we again, before we talk about migration, and we have loads of time, as you well know, we've got as much of time as we need till 6 o'clock. As an agnostic who isn't a Christian, but somebody, and again, I'm not playing both sides of the fence here. I'm not. When I say I have great respect for Christians, I really do mean it, because some of the best people I know are sincere Christians. And there's a lot of beauty in the Bible and in the stories of the Bible and in the teachings of Jesus. There is. But it's not for me. I don't want to live in Iran, you know what I mean? I don't want to be governed by people who say, well, there's a higher authority than me. I'm like, well, hang on, I put you in power. I want you to govern with common sense. I want what you want, Herman. I want, you know, small government. But I don't want you to be making decisions based on your belief in a higher authority. Were we able to live with that previously? Was that something that we were able to deal with historically? Or were we not? I mean, how would you see Ireland back in the 50s and 60s?
I don't know. Like, I was born in 1968.
Yeah, me 74.
There was a removal of anything to do with the church in 1973 from the Constitution, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember living in a very draconian church-controlled society.
That's the point I'm making. So prior to 1973,
what I would associate with Christianity myself, or Catholicism, was the kindness and love of my grandmother, who was very devout and would pray every day and would talk about forgiveness and, being kind and forgiveness and loving others. Tiny little wee woman, but a real deep faith and a real kind of innate kindness as well. And always talking about, you have to forgive. And I didn't experience this as the left are always going about, the big bogeyman of the all-powerful church. I never experienced that in my life.
Yeah, I'm going to go along with that. I mean, I'm 74, but speaking to, as I did years ago, I spoke to much more senior relatives, some of them agnostic or atheist, and they didn't see that there was any huge problem with the church's authority when they grew up in the 1950s and 60s. They might have whinged about, you know, the parish priest. If you had a bad parish priest, you know, he might turn up and, you know, he might have to roll out to China and he might be an ignorant old so-and-so and all of that. But there wasn't a big problem. I get that, and I'd love to get into that more, but time is pressing, of course.
But can I just
jump right back in. Go
there's
ahead.
No faith test at all to join the Irish Freedom Party. Like, we are a pro-life, our principles are that we are pro-life, we're in favour of, we're opposed to the destruction of innocent human life, we're pro-family, because it's good for the country, it's good for the individuals as well, that because we're social animals, and the importance of family, that the people have a mother and father, they have an identity. And from that, they get an education, culture, and being brought into society. And like every country, no country has a future without children. So we are pro-family, but there's no faith test. But myself and the chairman were both Catholics of some hue. And but a lot of people, some people in the party aren't. So it's like there's no faith test to enter the party.
Fair enough.
But we are a pro-life, pro-family a political party.
Yeah, and I don't know if I gave someone...
Because we think it's good for the country and we believe it's good for individuals. It's not because we read it somewhere.
No, fair enough. I get that. And like I said, for some reason, you know, not too long ago, only a decade or two or three decades ago, ideas could exist and ideologies could exist in communities and people got on and there was respect. You're listening to Herman Kelly. Herman, I'm going to use a bad word now. You strike me as a guy who wouldn't swear that often. But
I don't think my friends would think
they would disagree, right? You come across a very mild mannered guy speaking with me. What's going on the border is a clusterfuck, really, isn't it? I mean, what is going on?
Well,
go ahead.
The whole thing about is it? I haven't seen or heard of any evidence that 80% of the people who are claiming asylum are coming down from Belfast. Now, because this 80% figure has now been thrown around by Helen McEntee, but a short time earlier, Micheál Martin saying it was 60%, and then this percentage goes up, and yet they don't keep any statistics about where these people are coming from. So how can they say that it's 80%? We're not told. And of course, because we have a ridiculously compliant media in Ireland, they don't ask the hard questions. But what happened transpired last week that Helen McEntee was cross-examined by an Oireachtas committee about the whole system, immigration control and deportation. And basically it came out that she didn't even have the for all intents and purposes, there is no functioning deportation system in Ireland. If you come to Ireland, you can stay in Ireland to your heart's content. I think it was only 1.37% of people who were told that they didn't have refugee status and their cases were judged and they had to leave the country. Only 1.37% of all those who were told they weren't accepted actually left, or the state had proof that they left. So she was obviously exposed herself as someone who was incompetent, not up the job. Well, and certainly the department of which he was running wasn't doing the job for which it is set up. So there is no functioning deportation system in Ireland. So isn't it incredible that a few days after this comes out, where she was deeply embarrassed by cross-examination by Michael McDowell, former Attorney General, and a TD from Clare, Michael McNamara, basically shown that she didn't have a grasp and a control of what was going on. And then she throws this around, it's an easy one in Ireland. When the going gets tough, always blame Britain, because that's we've had 800 years of occupation, and it's always easy to throw out blame Britain. Well, sorry, Britain hasn't been, well, not in the 26 counties, anyway. Obviously they're still in the north, but they haven't been in 26 counties for over 100 years. So it's certainly, I don't think it's Britain's fault that there is a common travel area between Ireland and Great Britain. So people can come back and forth. One, there's no evidence that it's 80%. And two, really, it's her fault. It's the Irish government policy fault, because the vast majority of people come into Ireland legally, not illegally. They're not asylum seekers. They're not refugees. They come in completely legally through EU open borders. Are at the moment in Ireland, there's over 1 million non-Irish nationals in south of Ireland. And even in the 5 years that the Irish Freedom Party has existed, when we started 5 years ago, the percentage of non-nationals in Ireland or people born outside Ireland was 12%. It's now 22%. So within 5 years, it's gone up 10%.
Yeah, I've seen those stats. Yeah.
Rate of increase is phenomenal. Now, since 1995, the population has increased by 1.5 million or 42%, which is absolutely colossal. So it's actually Irish government policy and EU open borders, which has allowed the free-for-all for as many people who want to come into Ireland can come in. And so it's actually the policy decisions of the Irish government which has led us here. And also going back to the relationship with Brexit, when Brexit was voted on, the Irish, British people approved that win in June 2016.
Yes.
The then Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, set up with the British government bilateral relations. They have a negotiation, they have a bilateral agreement of how, because there is in Ireland, there's one island, but it's two jurisdictions, British and Irish, and even though I'd say it's all Ireland. But Enda Kenny very wisely said, we'll negotiate things between ourselves and we will negotiate arrangements on the island. You think that's fair enough? That's a good idea. But then Leo Varadkar then became Taoiseach and he said, no, scrap it. There's not going to be any bilateral agreement between two countries. We are members of the EU and we will negotiate. There will be one negotiating front and it will be carried out by the European Union, not by me as Taoiseach of Ireland. So then it became Britain versus the EU and Michel Barnier was the one deciding on behalf of Ireland what our border policy was going to be. That was decided by the European Commission, not in the interests of Ireland. And of course, they wanted to do everything possible to break Brexit and to prevent it from happening. That actually came very close that it didn't at all. But It was the Irish government and under Leo Varadkar which insisted that our position will be negotiated by the European Union. There will be no standalone bilateral agreement between Ireland, between the UK and Ireland. So then I suppose they're reaping what they sow now.
I haven't interjected there because everything you said there is accurate. I was listening to it very carefully. Your take on that is 100% right. I've got to ask you this. If to this day the great majority of migrants arriving in Ireland are legal because Ireland is in the Schengen zone, because Ireland is a member of the European Union, why do some nationalists then obsess or seemingly obsess about migrants coming in from West Africa or from parts of the Middle East or elsewhere? I don't think they do.
I think it's the press who obsess about refugees and asylum seekers, because on a purely numerical basis, the vast majority of people coming in numerically are actually coming in completely legally through EU open borders. And I think it's the press who are always, they just want to talk about the number of asylum seekers, or recently because of Ukraine, the number of refugees. But actually numerically, that's not the big game changer, because normally there would normally be, I don't know, historically anyway, less than 20,000 a year asylum seekers coming into Ireland. But when you say that some years at the pop, like if you look at PPS numbers, which is social security number as you would have in the UK, we have basically between 250 and 300,000 new PPS numbers every year. Less than 24% of those in the last number of years have gone to Irish people. So, don't know. Like, you can see the huge influx coming in, and it's not...
Yeah, I'm not trying to catch you out, Herman. When I ask you this, I'm not trying to catch you out, so don't think I am. And if you don't know, you don't know. It doesn't matter, because you're not expected to know everything. What are Ireland's current net migration figures? And just while you're thinking of that, for listeners who don't understand, you subtract the number of those who leave from the number of those who arrive, and you get a net migration number. It's crazy here in the UK, as you know, it's over 500,000 a year. It's a city the size of Wolverhampton being added to the UK every year. And listen, as a old trade unionist socialist, bleeding heart liberal as I am, my big issue is with the fact that services are decimated. And I do have a problem with cultures and the impact on the indigenous culture. I do, I'll say that. But for me, it's the impact on public services. Do you know what our net migration is? Have you any idea? How bad is it?
No, I don't have a figure in front of me, so I'm not going to...
Fair enough, yeah. I wasn't trying to catch you out either.
I'm not going to bluff. But one thing I will definitely agree with you in that like there's a... In an island which has finite resources, if there's a sharp increase in demand for housing, for example, and there's not a large increase in supply of housing, well, if demand increases sharply without a corresponding increase in supply of housing, then demand goes up, prices go up, and it becomes difficult to find a house to rent. And one, it's difficult to find a house, and two, it's difficult to afford a house or to afford to rent a house. It stands to reason. And if, okay, the cake may be slightly bigger, but when you have a lot more mouths to feed, everyone's going to get less cake. You don't have to be a genius to work this out.
No, it's and fairly straightforward.
As you rightly say there, public services, when more people have to be in the hospital, more people have to be in school, more people, you know, that means that there's more kids in the classroom, etc., etc. There was a case there last week. Was it Aoife O'Sullivan or Aoife Johnson down in Clare? She died. She went into hospital and she didn't get the... she had sepsis. She didn't get the antibiotics that she needed, very simply, on time. She was left in the emergency for quite a long time. And by the time she got the antibiotics, it was too late. Sepsis had taken hold. And, I don't know,
why was the delay?
People around here in Midlothian find it very difficult to get a dental appointment, to get a doctor's appointment, etc. It's taking 2 weeks. Well, that's what happens.
Herman, why was what happened to Aoife related to the pressure brought to bear by mass migration? Is there some connection there that I missed?
When the numbers of people coming in seeking public services, such as going to hospital, going to a doctor, finding a dentist, sending their children to school, because the numbers have increased. But the services haven't increased correspondingly. Like it takes longer now to get a doctor.
Fair enough,
more people in the hospital.
Fair enough, but some people listening might say it could be medical incompetence. It might just have been medical negligence too. It might have had nothing to do with mass immigration. I'm just making that point, but anyway, I'm not being pedantic.
Case.
Yeah, but it's an interesting case.
The general trend, when numbers go up and services remain the same, well, everybody gets a less slice of the cake.
Of course they do. You're listening to Herman Kelly. Herman is the president of the Irish Freedom Party. Listen, in the time we have left, I interviewed a gentleman called Eddie Hobbs yesterday. You'll know of him, of course, I'm sure. Irish economist and financial advisor. He reckons that in June, first week in June, local elections in Ireland, EU elections in Ireland, that this government, that this political class, not just the Irish government, is going to get one hell of a bloody nose or a kick in the arse, and it's going to be a big change. Do you see that? I know you're going to say yes, but tell me why. Why are we going to see a real change or a real movement against what's happening through the ballot box in June?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
No, I'm only kidding.
Go ahead.
Yes. I think the first swallow of summer for ourselves came in March of this year. There was double referenda. One was to erase the words woman and mother from the Irish Constitution. The second part was pretty much to replace Irish families and redefine. And instead of the family, it was going to other durable relationships, plural, which could have meant anything and everything. That got resoundingly defeated in a referenda, one referenda by 75%, the other one by 65%. They got absolutely hammered. I think that the political class were very cocky. They completely misread the mood of the country. And I think the anger about various things, about incompetence, like people feel the pressure when they go to hospital and they see their granny having to wait in an emergency for hours, and she's lying on a trolley, and you think, what the hell? And they know that their own children cannot get a house, and they're like 21,000 young Irish people went to Australia last year. These people can't get a house, can't see a future. They're off emigrating to places like Australia and Canada, and it's heartbreaking. I'm running as a candidate for MEP in Midlands Northwest. There's also Michael Leahy, he's chairman of the party. He's running in Ireland. So if there's a guy in Dublin, Dermot O'Connor. But I was in Sligo there last weekend, and I met this couple. They were walking along outside the spa where I was, and they both had spent time in England. They came back to Ireland where they came from, and they were both very upset. They were saying about the three kids, and none of the three kids who were in their late teens, early 20s, saw a future in Ireland, and the three of them were talking about emigrating to Australia. So for them, like, the man was almost crying as I was talking to him. That I met another guy in Kildare there 2 months ago. He had actually done a video. He had just come back from leaving his third son off to Dublin Airport to fly off to Australia. So his three sons had gone off to Australia. So they don't see a future. They don't see that they're going to have the ability to buy a house and have build a good life and a future for the family here. So they're going off elsewhere. And it's tragic. And people are angry. And I really hope that through, they will give the Irish establishment a good kick in the ballot box on June the 7th and show them who's boss. Because what I refer to as the Uni Party, which is the amalgamation of the political class, media class, and NGO class in Ireland, they're in this ideological bubble. It's done a lot of damage to the Irish people. And I think a lot of people have had enough with all this trendy, woke nonsense about, look, even there, Sinn Féin, it used to be about a 32-county Ireland. Now it's all about 32 genders. Just as that referenda showed, you have a weak, ideologically inebriated political class, but you have ordinary people who just want, they want to grow up. They want their children to be able to get a house, go to school, get a job, stay here. People are angry, and I think Eddie Hobbs is right. that the government are in, and that not only the government, but like, look at these parties, like during the lockdown, especially the left, Sinn Féin, People Before Puberty, People Before Profit, etc. They're all supposed to be in opposition, but during the lockdown, they were demanding a harder, stronger, longer lockdown. So they weren't opposition at all. They were actually, if anything, they're even worse than the government. So there is a new nationalist force which is rising up. And I think that we are, like the Irish Freedom Party, we have 22 candidates in the local election so far, with three in the different constituencies of the European election. We are going up. There'll be other parties, nationalist parties, which will, Independent Ireland maybe, which will go up as well. And I think we will provide a shock to those in power, and that the, it'll be a very clear message that we've had enough. And the first thing we do is, how's the Irish first? And, you know, why aren't Irish people good enough to make their own laws, decide their own budgets and borders? I believe they are.
Do you think, final question will be, if you don't mind being as brief as you can, because I've got to wrap it up shortly. Could Ireland see, maybe I'm talking to him, maybe, a Viktor Orban type situation? Could we see, because of what's happened to the Irish, and you've described, there's no point in me summing it up, you've summed it up the last few years in particular. Could we see a situation where somebody like Orban could come, it's more difficult in Ireland, of course, because of our proportional representation, but could it happen in the future, something like that?
I definitely think so. That I think the mood of the country at the minute is opposed to this centralised, idiotic government, which gets its ideas from America and Brussels. They want an Irish Ireland, which is run for the benefit of Irish people, not in an exclusionary, we hate foreigners type of way, but just want a better future for themselves and their families, get the basics of being able to get a house and an education and healthcare. And I think there's definitely a nationalist comeback at the minute. And I would, well, and there's a big swing across Europe for more nationalist Eurosceptic parties to be elected. So let's happen. Let's see what happens after June the 7th. And I believe there will be a seismic shock, not only in Ireland, but across the whole of Europe.
I won't be taking my eyes off it. I'm sure we'll talk around that time again. In any case, Herman, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Herman.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Herman Kelly. Herman is the president of the Irish Freedom Party. The time is coming up now for 11 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. I've got some comments to read out on everything we've been discussing during the 2 hours, and then I'll wrap it up. Thanks again to Herman. It is. It's 11 minutes to the top of the hour.
You're listening to The Richie Allen Show, the most listened to independent news radio show in the world. It's the BBG, not the BBC.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Yes, thank you for your messages. I'm sorry I didn't read this one. Claire wanted to know, was Herman including children in his numbers? Children of Irish people who were born abroad. And she then said a huge amount of Irish people emigrated after the financial crash of 2008. Many had children abroad and then returned, including myself, says Claire, who was in New Zealand, weren't you, Claire? And came home. That's right. Hi to Wendy, who says, we must have had your chemtrails in Donny today then, Richie. The bastards, she says, have been at it all day. We've got milky skies now, says Wendy. Well, I've been sitting here for the last, well, nearly 2 hours, but longer, really, because I've been sitting in the studio prepping before coming on. And when I came in, it was absolutely gorgeous outside. My computer is telling me it remains 18 degrees and sunny here in Salford. It was lovely, to be honest. Like I said, it's been really, really cold, unseasonably cold here in recent weeks. So it was a real pleasure this morning. Don on this issue says, hi Don, they are currently sky spraying over Walkden, Little Halton, says Don. Thank you, Don. And I've got to go to the website, because it's not that I'm neglecting it. the website is, it's not always easy for me to access it when I'm on air to read comments out. Like I said, before too long there'll be a new looking website and it will have a few interesting functions and features. Please do believe me. Okay, fantastic. Alrighty. Wayne says, on what Marilyn Hawes was talking about earlier on, I believe children are being used as an excuse for further censorship, which should be resisted at all costs. The ID system currently being rolled out on some sites is equally as dangerous to our freedoms. Other ways can be found to stop online abuse. And I did make that point to Marilyn when she was on earlier on, didn't I, Wayne? Yes, I don't believe the online safety bill, which has, of course, received royal assent and is currently law. I don't believe for a moment that it was really about protecting children on the internet from groomers or from self-harm videos or bullying. I really don't believe that. I believe, as Wayne said there, it was the excuse really to come after free speech and open discussion and open dialogue on all of these issues we discuss on this programme and on else on other programmes like this. So there you go. Let me do a quick roundup of Unnucht. That's the news to you and me. Unnucht. Before I do wrap it up today, I suppose while I'm doing this, I could give you a promo for the Papers podcast. You probably know by now, Monday to Friday, there is a newspaper review podcast presented by me. It's very simple, cheap and cheerful. It usually hits it or drops even around about 7:30 a.m. Listen to it or don't listen to it. It might be, it might not be your thing. Now, Will B is listening. Good evening, Will B. Richie, Geert Wilders in the Netherlands is the Dutch Orban. By very far the largest political party and growing in the polls. Too difficult to get him as Prime Minister, says Will B. Hi to Mark, who asks, which AI voice generator do you use and is it free? Yes, there is a free one. Oh, I can't tell you off the top of my head now, Mark, because I don't have it open and I can't remember the name of it. I'll get back to you on that, but there are a number of them. There's one I use which is free, but if you spend a few bucks, you get lifetime access to it. I think it was $25 or something. And what is it? It's Parrot AI, I think, or something along those lines. It's just a bit of good fun. Yeah, I've been dicking around with it for the laugh. That's a technical term, by the way, just in case you're wondering. I've been dicking around with the AI. Like Donald Trump, for example, he has his opinion on how to deal with Ireland's immigration problem.
If I was the Irish Taoiseach, I'd build a wall in the middle of the Irish Sea and make Ireland great again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that sounds so much like him, doesn't it?
If I was the Irish Taoiseach, I'd build a wall in the middle.
And he nearly said Taoiseach properly. So it's good, that AI. It's good. You know, if he was the Irish...
If I was the Irish Taoiseach, I'd build a wall in the middle of the Irish Sea and make Ireland great again.
Yeah. And I could have done a bullshit story earlier on, but I wouldn't do it because it's unfair and unkind. But like if today was April 1st, I could have done a bullshit story. I could have said, remember how your Baldy Gammon, that's me, predicted that in the very near future, Bill Gates and the World Health Organization and pharma like AstraZeneca and all the rest of them, that Pfizer, that they would have vaccines for everything, even the most innocuous of things. Now, I have said this, by the way. This isn't part of the gag. So I've said, like, in the future, there will be an mRNA jab for everything. Now, Bill Gates was speaking to CNN this morning, and he confirmed what the BBG has been saying all along.
I'm developing vaccines for the menstrual cycle, hangovers, smelly feet, flatulence, body odor, and bad breath. You will take my vaccines and be happy.
What did he say there? He said smelly feet. Did he? He's developing a vaccine for the menstrual cycle. He's already done that. He's already done that with the COVID jabs.
I'm developing vaccines for the menstrual cycle, hangovers, smelly feet, flatulence, body odor, and bad breath. You will take my vaccines and be happy.
And you'll be happy. Bill Gates there. Just before anybody gets sued, that's not really Bill Gates. That is an artificial intelligence program. A vaccine for flatulence and smelly feet and all the rest of it. Come here and I tell you, thank you so much to my guests, to Herman Kelly, the president of the Irish Freedom Party, and the child safety campaigner, the former teacher, Marilyn Hawes, freedom-abuse.org. Do help her out if you can. I know the times are very tight right now for everybody. Until tomorrow then, from your BBG, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Have a great evening. I'm closing out with the PM Dawn and the Dalai Lama song. It really is about the Dalai Lama. See you tomorrow.
I'm developing vaccines for the menstrual cycle, hangovers, smelly feet, flatulence, body odor, and bad breath. You will take my vaccines and be happy.